Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
Hello and welcome to a whole new version of The Sound Test, where I celebrate video game music in all of its forms. Now, if you're a long-time listener, you'll know that The Sound Test usually takes the form of either interview episodes or fairly long live shows styled after a kind of radio show. Whereas this time, we're doing Sound Test Top 5s, where I'm going to be focusing in on a feature that I used to do on the live show, a top 5 list of my favourite things of any one topic each week. Now, I won't be doing episodes each week with this brand new iteration of the Sound Test, probably more like each month, but it is nonetheless a top 5, and a few runners-up along the side as well. And although these episodes won't be going out live anymore, I certainly am not scripting them and editing them too much or anything like that, so it should still have a live feel, and hopefully I should be seeing some of you old listeners in the YouTube chat right now while this is premiering. So, what is today's top 5? It is gangster video games, mafia-based video games, organized crime, all of those kinds of things. Reason being, and it's somewhat tenuous, is that I'm just basically a massive Sopranos fan, and with the brand new prequel movie, The Many Saints of Newark, having released in the past couple of weeks, I have, of course, been to see it at the cinema, and it's brought mafia and gangster things right to the forefront of my mind, and I thought, screw it, why not do a Sound Test episode about it and return to the old shop. Now, I've got a varied show lined up for you guys with all sorts of stuff on the slate, but I'm trying to leave a few things a surprise, so we'll see about those as we get through the show. But what we're going to kick off with is a kind of new iteration of the old sound effects game that I used to play, but we're not going to take it so seriously this time. It's going to be a lot more casual. I'm going to play a sound at the top of the show, and I'm going to reveal what it is at the end of the show, and we'll see if anybody in the YouTube chat can identify it as we go through the episode. And the sound effect will always come from a game featured within the playlist. So have a close listen to the things I'm talking about, have a close listen to what systems these different tracks are from, and see if you can make a connection between what the sound effect is and what the game is that it's from. So let's play this right now. It's a pretty funny one. I love classic, old, repetitive death sounds like that. So as I say, that is from a game that is featured on today's playlist. So keep your ears pricked, and I think there should be a couple of clues, because we're all VGM enthusiasts here, so we should be able to tie that into the right era, and maybe even the right system. So shall we just get into some of the music, because we do not want to be rambling too much on my first episode back in God knows how long. I think it's been about 7 months. So we're going to start out with a runner-up, actually, before we get into any of my personal top five choices, and with the oldest game on today's playlist, Muggsy's Revenge from 1986, originally released on the ZX Spectrum, Commodore 64, and the Amstrad, and it is a sequel to the original, simply titled Muggsy. And the music to that game was composed by Neil Brennan, but I thought we would kick off today really, really strong with this excellent remix by Hazel from 2007. And to be honest, if my name was Muggsy, I'd be looking for revenge too. The unmistakable sound of Streets of Rage there, one of Yuzo Koshiro's absolute classic soundtracks, the man himself. And that track was Moon Beach, which I think is pretty much the only track off the Streets of Rage soundtrack that I haven't played on the show yet. Because obviously it's one of the greatest VGM soundtracks of all time, and we have hammered that on the head in previous iterations of this show. But it simply has to show up today because it is my number 5 in my personal top 5 gangster and mafia games. And you might be asking why. Because you actually play as undercover police officers on the Streets of Rage, of course, beating up various mafia members. But that's kind of tenuous, if you ask me, and I'm going to lay out a rule as we go through the rest of the show that my mafia choices, you have to be playing as somebody who's actually in the mob, not as a police officer chasing the mob, not with the mafia on the side as part of the story, but you actually have to be playing as mafia characters. So how does this work for Streets of Rage? Well, if you are a seasoned player, you will of course know about the alternative ending in which you can take over the crime syndicate yourself and become the bad guy, as one of the actual tracks on the soundtrack is called. Wasn't going to go with that because it was a little bit repetitive, and Moon Beach is such a banger, but I think that makes it qualify as number 5 in my top 5 because it's one of my favourite games of all time. And if you can end up as the boss of a crime syndicate at the end of it, it's got to be counted in my top 5. But let's move on into one of today's surprises, which is where I've managed to actually get some journalistic credentials here and do some digging. And I've found out some rather earth-shattering news about our favourite Nintendo mascot, Mario. Now, we all know him as the wholesome Mushroom Kingdom plumber who can really do no wrong and has no evil in his heart. I mean, Luigi maybe a little bit, but certainly not Mario. But I've managed to dig a little bit into his past before he took that fated pipe down into the Mushroom Kingdom. And it turns out that Mario, he is Italian, was once a part of La Cosa Nostra, the mafia. And I have not only found claims of this to be able to just talk about this on my show, but I've actually found audio recordings in which to prove it. So shall we have a little listen to that? Be prepared to have your earth rocked. But before I go ahead with this, fair pre-warning, this features some extremely strong language, and you would not have thought it from Mario, but it's certainly appropriate of the mafia.
What's really funny is, the fucking bank job away in Sea Caucus, I'm in the middle of the fucking weeds, laying down. He comes over, he says, what are you doing? I said, I'm resting. Here you're resting. At a fucking beach in a park. I said, I'm resting. I know I'm resting. I'm resting. They pull me in. They start giving me all kinds of questions, you know, this and that. He says, oh, so what are you going to tell us, tough guy? I said, my usual. Zero. Nothing. I tell you, the fuck. He says, no, you're going to tell me something today, tough guy. I said, all right, I'll tell you something. Go fuck your mother. Bing, pow. You saw the paper, Anthony. My head was up like this. So now I'm coming around, you know. I start to come out of it. Who do I see in front of me? This big prick again. He says, oh, what do you want to tell me now, tough guy? I said, Bing, what are you doing here? I thought I'd tell you to go fuck your mother. I thought he was going to shit. Pow, Bing, pow. The fuck is... Hey, I wish I was big just once.
Funny.
What do you mean I'm funny?
Mario think you fantastic.
What do you mean? You mean the way I talk? What?
Let me think.
Funny how? I mean, what's funny about it?
Tommy, no, you got it all wrong.
Anthony. He's a big boy. He knows what he said. What'd you say?
You're right.
Funny how?
Oh, you got the Mario thinking now.
You mean, so? Well, let me understand this, because maybe it's me. I'm a little fucked up, maybe. But I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown. I amuse you. I make you laugh. I'm here to fucking amuse you. What do you mean funny? Funny how? How am I funny?
Mamma mia.
How the fuck am I funny? What the fuck is so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's funny.
You're making me cuckoo crazy.
You motherfucker. I almost had him. I almost had him. You stuttering Frankie. Frankie was
Now, you go to the bar.
Well, well, well. Mario, our beloved, wholesome Mario, caught up in an extremely tense gangster situation there, and I think you will agree that is world shattering, and Mario himself is going to have some questions to answer after the release of this show, and I'm expecting a press release, I'm expecting apologies, maybe even some denials. We'll have to see what Mario comes out with, because I'll tell you now, we're not even done with this. I've got more audio recordings of Mario, and we'll get to that later in the show. But let's continue on with my top five, straight into number four, where we're going to hear Turf by El Huervo from Hotline Miami, which, while you don't play as a mafia guy, see, I'm already breaking my rules, and the storyline is so very surreal and esoteric and interesting and strange, it so prominently features Russian organized crime as a part of its storyline, as a part of its plot, that I just had to include it in today's list. I absolutely love this game. If you're a long time listener of the Sound Test, you'll have heard me go on and on about an old PlayStation 1 game called Loaded. And when Hotline Miami first came out in 2012, it really, really reminded me of that kind of thing. So I'm a big fan of this game. Big fan of this track, Turf by El Huervo, number four, Hotline Miami. Thank you. Fighting theme 2 there from, and I'm going to have to apologise for my pronunciation straight up, Vladimir Simunek from the 2002 PS2 and Xbox release Mafia. And I think it's very obvious as to why a game called Mafia is ending up in my show about gangster video games. It's all in the title. And of course this is a big release. It was very, very well received and it got a definitive edition in 2020, just last year, which I believe we have played music from in the past. However, I haven't actually sat down and played this game myself, so I cannot include it in my top 5. Instead, it is one of my runners-up, but lovely little ditty there. And after having done some research on this game and looking at some screenshots, I think this is something I'm going to want to go back to because I'm a big, big fan of those old PS2 kind of sandbox-type games. And I'm kind of annoyed that this one passed me by. I think maybe I'll have to check out that definitive edition. But let's move into a game that's very similar to it. Again, kind of runner-up, definitely not in the top 5. The Godfather from 2006. Again, very obvious as to why this is showing up into a gangster-themed show. Godfather probably being the most beloved and most famous gangster mafia film of all time. But it did get this huge release in 2006, video game adaptation, that is filled with some really, really interesting credits and some really interesting connections to the original film, including some of the actors. Now, on the music side of things, you had composing brand new stuff, Bill Conti, who's actually famous for coming up with some of the most well-known themes from Rocky. I think we can all agree that Rocky has incredible music. But Bill Conti, working alongside Ashley Irwin, has worked to create an absolutely massive original score to complement that original music by Nino Rota from The Godfather. And this is simply titled Track 66. Now, only really a short track from The Godfather there, and we've heard it in isolation, and I feel like that's not really enough to talk about what is one of the biggest mafia releases of all time in the world of video games. So I'm fortunate this week, as the big surprise I've been trying to keep most of the week, to be joined by Ken Felton, that game's audio director. And of course, Ken has worked on a multitude of different massive games. Check out Ken Felton on Moby Games and you'll see just how much he's worked with. And we're going to have a little bit of a chat about all of the different audio aspects of the Godfather release from 2006. So Ken, can you hear me?
Yep, I hear you now.
Oh, hello. Right, okay. Good to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. So how long have you been doing this?
Must be about nearly 3 years now, I'd imagine.
And you're a sound designer as well, I take it?
No, I'm not. I'm a musician, first and foremost. And I just kind of fell into this through a passion for game audio, really.
Interesting. Okay. I don't do this very often, so I hope you get what you want, and let's do it. I've got to get to my regular gig here pretty soon.
No problem. I've only got a little set of questions, really. But first up, like, as the audio director, I think I've spoken to a lot of composers in my time, but I don't think I've ever really sat and spoken to a dedicated audio director. In many ways, it kind of sounds like you're the don of the department, since we're talking about gangster stuff. But what actual responsibilities does that come with? And how hands-on do you get with the various departments, like voice, sound, and music?
Oh, that's a great question. All right, well, I have to then answer that with basically the quote or the mandate that my executive producer on that particular game, a gentleman by the name of Nick Earle, he told me at that point where I was deemed audio director for that project, he looked at me and he said, "So, you know, you're just basically responsible for everything that comes out of the speakers." And what he meant was, you know, I didn't have to create every sound. I didn't have to write any music. I'm not a composer. But I always basically had to make sure it all sounded great, and I had to figure out how to get it done. So as an audio director, on that particular game, that was an interesting one. It ended up being a very, very large game, and the audio team became very large. But so to answer your question, I put together a team. I had a dialogue supervisor, I had a music supervisor, I had a lead sound designer, and then we filled that team in, or with that, those core folks in with additional people if we needed it. Right. So, I don't know, you went out and you did a long recording session. You did 3 days of recording. The audio or the dialogue supervisor, she had a lot of good stuff. Her name was Andrea Plastis. And we got other people to come in, to edit the stuff, or we farmed it out, or whatever. So basically, audio director means I am responsible for the overall sound of the game, and a big part of it is putting together the team, is figuring out how to do this, budgeting for extra dialogue people, budgeting for additional sound effects people. Maybe we needed to go out and record some stuff. So kind of the overall sound of the game, the creative vision is mine, but day to day it's a whole lot of nuts and bolts and spreadsheets and budgets and hiring and contracting, etc.
That's really, really interesting. And if my research isn't wrong, you actually transitioned into game work in around 1994. I think it was with Wing Commander 3. After several years working with film and television. So was there any significant ways that being an audio director with games differs from that?
Oh, well, you done your research? Well done. So I did spend, I don't know, I was in the film and television business there for a while. I think I was at Universal Studios for about 4 years. And in no way, shape, or form was I anywhere close to an audio director. I was basically working on the scoring stage and in the transfer department, they called it, and then doing very early, doing sound design, sound effects editing, I guess I'd call it back then. That was on MAG and 24-track analog tape. But anyway, so that was good in that that gave me some basic skills, some basic ideas. Taught me a bit about working with a format back then called Dolby Pro Logic. That was an analog format, and that's how I got into Electronic Arts. And on Wing Commander 3, you're exactly right. They had a big project, Wing Commander 3. It was an interactive movie for people who were unfamiliar with it. It was Mark Hamill and all kinds of John Rhys Davies. It was a cool franchise. And it had over 3 hours of movies. So you'd watch a movie and then you'd say, I want to be the bad guy. I want to go the good route or whatever. And so there was all this dialogue. Anyway, we were mixing it in Dolby Surround, Dolby Pro Logic. And I had been doing that. And I came up to the Bay Area, Northern California, was looking for work, film, television, and there was very little of it. And I got some advice I should go see this guy named Murray Allen over at Electronic Arts. And so I went and talked to him, and there was nothing. And then a couple weeks later, I had a message on my machine. You remember those machines? He said, I could use your help. And so sure enough, somebody had a baby coming and they needed to stay on schedule. So I got my foot in the door and And I was lucky enough to work with some very, very talented interactive, you know, interactive sound designers, game sound designers, and they kind of showed me the ropes as far as the granular sound design, the techniques, the tools that are used to do, you know, game audio. So I got lucky. I got very lucky.
And when working on big movie adaptation video games, in this case specifically The Godfather, how do you balance being faithful to the original film and the sound that comes there and creating something new and something that's yours and something that's more appropriate for the game?
It's a good question. There is an overall, you know, for all disciplines, you have to stay somewhat true. You have to pay homage, if you will, to the original look, feel, vibe of that IP, right? I mean, that's what you're doing. You're not renting the IP, whether it's Godfather or whether it was Lord of the Rings or whatever. You know, you're taking this IP and you need to be faithful to it because, to some degree, because people are picking up the game, buying the game because they already like that game. They already like that fiction. So you have to keep that in mind. But then you also have to be aware every single day, every moment of every day, that, you know, you're making a game and that there are things in the game that, you know, obviously are not part of the original fiction. So you're making stuff up. You're coming up with ways to, I don't know, swap out weapons, upgrade this, upgrade that, drive cars. So you just have to kind of look at what the game needs, like any typical game, whether it's a space shooter or it's a, I don't know, a James Bond game, whatever. There's the game mechanics that you have to support. And then once you get the tools in place, once you have systems in place from your engineering team to, you know, stream the dialogue that you need to stream or to, I don't know, get all your stuff within a certain memory budget. Once you get the building blocks and the nuts and bolts of the system down, you can start to look at the content and you can start to evaluate the content maybe from that, you know, 5,000 foot level of like, well, does this kind of feel like the original IP, right? Does it kind of sound like, you know, what the movie sounded like? And in a lot of times you decide, no, it doesn't. And that's okay, 'cause we like the way it sounds. And it supports the gameplay, but then there are opportunities for, you know, with music especially, or with dialogue, to direct, to collaborate with the talent, meaning, you know, voice talent, composers, etc., to say, you know, maybe for this level or this thing, we should be a little bit more like that scene that happens, you know, whatever, with Michael and Don Vito, or et cetera, et cetera. And so you kind of, you look for opportunities to again, pay respect, to put it in Godfather terms, to pay respect to the original IP and to the original, you know, composers and actors and directors that were on the movie. So, you know, the game rules. The bottom line is that the game wins. It's a game. It's not a movie. But you do your best to show respect.
Yeah. And there are these big connections to the original film as well. Like you mentioned the voice actors, and that was going to be one of my questions. Like, you have a strong, solid veteran voice cast team, but then you also have some of these original actors like James Caan, Robert Duvall. And how was it to work with such huge names and to be able to have that level of authenticity?
It was a lot of fun. Yeah, we felt very, very fortunate that we were able to work with those guys. And to be honest with you, you know, I think they enjoyed it. I'm trying to remember if Robert Duvall or James Caan had done a game before. I think Duvall might have. But they were great, and I think they took it as a challenge. I remember Robert Duvall especially. We went back, and I believe it was Washington, D.C. we recorded him in. And, you know, he was super nice. He's a total pro. And he came in and he started reading the lines. And in about, you know, 30 seconds, he made a comment like, oh, okay. All right. Let me think of this now. And then in you know, in about 30 seconds, excuse me, he went from Robert Duvall to, you know, to Tom Hagen. And he immediately dropped right back into it. And I remember at one point he kind of looked up and he went, oh, this is fun. Yeah, I got this. He's back. And away he went, and he went to the studio and we started working. So, and James Caan was very, very much the same. So I think they had a good time. They didn't change the script too much. We definitely had opportunities where we kept telling them, you know, or every chance we had, we'd say something like, okay, now that was great. It was a good take. Do you have another idea? Would your character, would Sonny or would Tom Hagen, would they say something different? And you know, sometimes they'd go, no, I can't really think of that. Or sometimes they'd go, yeah, let me try something else. And, you know, many times those were great takes too. So it was a lot of fun. They were very talented people, and I enjoyed my time working with them.
That's absolutely fantastic. And of course, before his unfortunate death, he did actually work somewhat with Marlon Brando. And I unearthed this quote actually from you from an article around the time where you said he really gave us a lot of insight into the mind of the Don, into the essence of his character. And in trying to understand the Don, in trying to understand the Godfather universe, it really does all come down to the concept of respect. And I found that really interesting, and I wondered if you could talk a little bit more about your experiences with Marlon Brando and expand a little on how that respect manifested in your work.
Wow. Well done on the research. So yes, we were able to go visit Mr. Brando at his home. And by we, I mean it was myself. It was Phil Campbell, the lead writer, creative director, I think was his title. Hunter Smith, he was an executive producer. And David DeMartini, may he rest in peace. And we went to Mr. Brando's house up on the top of Mulholland Drive. And Mr. Brando was extremely gracious. He was extremely welcoming, and he was considerate and professional. And unfortunately, he was also very sick. And so we did what we had. He recorded lines. He did his best for us. We spent most of the day there. He brought in food. He was such a great host, super nice. And, you know, he did some lines for us. He did a lot of lines actually. And unfortunately none of those lines really, you know, were able to be put in the game for various reasons. It just wasn't great. He was weak, to be honest. And he was at the end of his life. I think he was alive for another 3 months, 2 months after we met him. It was really nice to meet him. He did a great job, or he did the best job he could. But more importantly to me, to kind of answer your question, he talked a lot about movies. He talked a lot about his experiences, and he talked a lot about the magic that goes into the magic that happens in a theater, the magic that happens, you know, when you've got these, how do you put it, these images that were dancing on a silver screen, and how there's this connection between the images on the screen and the audience. And in the end, what was his quote? He said something like, in the end, it's really the audience that does the acting, and the actors are just kind of mouthpieces and bodies for the audience, which I thought was really fascinating. So yes, we were fortunate. I was fortunate to meet him and to record him. And I don't know if this is known, but I did get one line of Marlon Brando. There is one Marlon Brando line in the game, and that happens to take place in the level where it's after Don Vito has been shot. They tried to assassinate him, and the level is you playing as your character is trying to prevent the rival family, I think the Tattaglias, from sneaking into the hospital and finishing off the job. And so your job is to keep the assassins away from Don. And at one point, if you want to, if you can, you can take your character and you can bring them over to the locked hospital room door. And in there you can see Michael's in there with the Don, and they're having a conversation. And in that situation, I was able to get a line or two of Marlon Brando's in the game. And it actually kind of, well, it actually worked out well because Marlon Brando, you know, or the character Don Vito was recovering from, you know, gunshots. And so he sounded kind of weak and a little off. And actually, Marlon Brando's performance kind of matched that whole scene perfectly. So we got it. It was behind the door. It's a little muffled. It's a little futzed to make it seem like it would be, you know, you're hearing it kind of through a door or the glass. But I was happy that we were able to get Mr. Brando in the game.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm going to have to see if I can try and track that down to include in the episode.
Yeah, you have to go walk to the door. I'm pretty sure there's a trigger around it, and if you go walk up to the door, you can definitely hear it. But if you don't go over there, you won't hear it.
Right. Well, that's so cool. I'll see if I can find it. But on the music side of things, you've got Bill Conti, who was most famous for his work with Rocky, of course, teaming up with Ashley Irwin to sort of augment Nino Rota's original score. And this is really interesting to me too. So how did Bill come on board? And what was your direction for the music?
Oh, good question. Bill and Ashley were great to work with. How did Bill come on board? Well, honestly, we did auditions. We had a great, you know, at EA at that time, or still, there's a very talented creative gentleman named Steve Schnurr. Steve and his crew put us in contact with quite a few different composers, some that were, you know, up-and-comers and fresh, you know, and you know, just trying to get in the business, and they did great stuff. And then there was somebody like Bill, and there was another somewhat well-known composer whose name I'm blanking on at the moment. But anyway, we auditioned a bunch of people. Bill didn't really want to do a demo for us. You know, the word is kind of like, or the vibe that comes back from, usually not the artist themselves, but the agent, is like, oh, you know, there's no demos. Bill doesn't have to do demos. This artist doesn't have to do demos. You've seen their work in this show and this show and that show. And to a degree, that's right. However, we were looking for the ability to create motifs, to create themes for the different families. And we weren't always looking to have a big orchestration. Sometimes we wanted to kind of take it back to that very sparse acoustic instrument, like some of the cues that Nino Rota wrote. So in the end, I think we did get a few examples of some different possible themes, some family themes that I think Bill wrote for us. But in the end, that was pretty much it. I can't remember exactly how many minutes of music we contracted him for, but we did. I remember in the contract, we were creating themes for the different families, the different rival families. We were copying, paying homage, if you will, whatever you want to the original Nino Rota scores in some places, which you need to do because we licensed all that. And in the end, it was fun. We basically did it like you still do it to this day for most projects, where you'll do initial themes, you'll do initial mock-ups using synthesizers, basically just, you know, sketching it out. And we get approval and we get those into the game and we see how it feels. And we, at some point, we say, yeah, that's good. And then somebody like Ashley Irwin, Bill Conti's collaborator, orchestrator, etc., and basically Bill and Ashley they go to town and they start to flesh those ideas out. They put meat on those sketch bones, if you will, and then we recorded most of that stuff at Capitol Records down in L.A. And then Ashley and what was the engineer's name? It'll come to me. They mixed all this stuff for us, so it was a great experience. Bill did a great job and Ashley did a great job, and I think. It was fun. Some of the cues, some of the family motifs, I think were really sensational and somehow captured the vibe of those different rival families.
Yeah, there's some really good stuff on there, and I've got some of it lined up for the episode, and I'll probably be playing a little bit more of it underneath our interview as well. But authenticity did seem really important to the team. So on the sound effects side, was anything like actually plucked from the film itself, like, say, gunshots or something?
Yeah. No, we didn't do that. We talked about it. We used the film as reference. And that kind of goes back to your original question. We definitely, you know, paid homage to the sound of the film. But no, we pretty much did everything from scratch. And again, you know, you have to at some point. You know, I remember in the Xbox version of the game, you know, I think you could keep upgrading, right? You could keep upgrading your weapons. And so, you know, at some point it just gets a little bit ridiculous. Now, we didn't want to go, you know, obviously you don't want to sound like some kind of alien weapon or some kind of, you know, super modern, you know, tactical assault rifles. So we kind of kept that 1950s vibe with the weapons and with pretty much all the sounds. But, you know, you gotta upgrade it. Again, it's always a game. You have to support the gameplay, and you respect and you stay within the vibe and the artistic direction of the sound, original sound design, when you can.
Well, that's just fantastic, and there's some really great insight in all of this, and thank you for this conversation. But I've just got one last, more light-hearted question to finish up.
Sure.
Which is, since it is a kind of gangster special that I'm doing, I wondered if you had any particular favourite gangster movies or shows, besides The Godfather, of course.
Oh, Once Upon a Time in America. As far as sound design goes, that's one of the coolest intros ever, in my opinion. That's just knock your socks off kind of stuff. The first two Godfather movies, I could watch them forever. I learned more about, you know, the Godfather fiction than I ever thought I would. What am I trying to think of? No, movies I love, but I have to say that I'm a big fan of the Peaky Blinders series. And I would definitely call that organized crime, gangster, you know, family business. So I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah, definitely. That's just over here in my neck of the woods, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I can't wait for the next season to come out with that. And of course, you know, again, back over here, I like the Soprano stuff.
I'm a big Sopranos fan.
The Wire. I haven't seen the new spinoff, the new young Tony Soprano series yet, but
that's actually why I'm doing this episode, because I've been to see it at the cinema, so it put gangster stuff in my head really hardcore.
Nice. Yeah, it kind of gets, yeah, it gets in there. The one other thing I forgot to mention, another big part of the game, as far as music goes, we licensed a whole bunch of cool tunes. And if when you're driving around, you can hear a lot of that stuff. It was fun. We licensed some fairly well-known tunes we worked with a partner up in at EA Canada. She was great in helping us get licenses for some actual, you know, songs from that era. There was a Dean Martin song, a Rosemary Clooney song, if I remember right. And then another very cool thing was we found a production music library that was from that period. Actual, you know, kind of generic music that's written, and people license it to put under, you know, this TV commercial or that, you know, whatever. And we found a bunch of those cues that were also really well done. And it was from the period. It was actually absolutely legit. It wasn't like, you know, modern day recording techniques or modern day musicians. It was people from the 50s and they'd just done all this production music library. That was a lot of fun too. So not nearly as sexy as the Bill Conti score, but it filled out a lot of the musical territory that we had to put in there, because you had a lot of scenes or a lot of things where people would walk into a shop or into an apartment. There should be music playing, and then I think when you were driving around in the city in all the different cars, I think you could listen to anything you wanted as well. So we had to end up, I think in the end, we probably had about 35 minutes of non-score, of licensed, you know, source music. So that was fun too.
That's really, really interesting. And I knew that within half an hour interview with you, it would only be scratching the surface. So this is why we will have to catch up again at some point, Ken.
All right, sounds good.
Awesome. Well, this has been really good. And thank you so much for enhancing the gangster episode.
You're very welcome. I hope it goes well, and I look forward to getting an email from you with the with a link to it. I wish you well, and let's stay in touch, please.
Yeah, absolutely. It should be releasing on Sunday, so not too long from now.
Oh, wow. You are a busy guy, so cool. I look forward to it.
Right, nice one, Ken. Thank you so much, and have a good day.
Thanks, Lee. You too. Bye-bye.
Another isolated track from the Godfather game, their number 16. All of the tracks are simply just numbered, but to follow up a simply fantastic interview with Ken Felton there, I really, really enjoyed chatting to him, and his answers were so fascinating, particularly that little bit about Marlon Brando, so, so good. Gonna have to catch up with Ken in the future. But I tell you what, we're still not done in Godfather land. It's just too big of a film. It's just too big of a part of mafia fiction. And the 2006 video game adaptation of The Godfather wasn't the only one. There was, in fact, another one on the Amiga way back in 1992. And it was a little bit difficult to track down some music from this one. So let's just have a quick listen to the opening, which I believe is composed by Nino Rota for the original film, but in this case arranged by Justin Charvona. And I've had to just rip this from a YouTube video, so it is what it is. And let's have a fun little listen to this much older Godfather adaptation. Thank you. lovely stuff there from the Amiga version of Godfather, and it's pretty hard to track down any more music from that game. So if anybody can help me out with that, do let me know, because I'd be interested to hear if there's any more music hidden in there. But let's move straight on with more runners up. It's going to be a little bit of time before we get to number 3 in my top 5. With 2002's Getaway, I think this was a PS2 exclusive release actually, where we're going to head into my neck of the woods with a game that aimed to recreate large portions of London with a kind of British gangster influence. Things like Get Carter, that whole kind of Michael Caine thing. And I remember this game coming out, and I remember it being really cool, and at the time it feeling like its city was really expansive and really impressive. So I'll admit, I haven't played this since I was about 12 or 13, but it still stuck really strongly in my mind. And while it's not based in America, there are gangsters all over the world, and there are definitely gangsters in my own homeland, and we'll come to some more international mafia fellas later on down the line. But for now, let's listen to Andrew Hale's end theme from The Getaway. Interesting little side point, Andrew Hale would later go on to do some of the music for L.A. Noir, which of course features organised crime as well as a part of his plot.
Thank you.
Really cool little tune there that was tough to track down from a 1998 release called Gangsters Organized Crime, and that was simply titled Song 1 by David R. Punchin and Richard Wells. And this was a fairly popular release back at the end of the 90s. Big strategy mafia game. For you huge VGM enthusiasts out there, and I assume that there are a fair few listening to the sound test, Alistair Brimble, absolute classic composer, actually did some work on the sound effects for this game, and I've been getting more and more into my strategy games lately, so looking at some screenshots to this as well and reading about this game made me want to see if They must have this on GOG or something. You know, that good old games place where you can get all these old PC games, which I think this was. Looks so, so up my street. But unfortunately, because I haven't played it, can't dwell too much on that. I'm going to have to move straight in to number 3 in my top 5 this week. Gangster top 5. With Saints Row, of course, with the Saints being right at the front and centre of many of the plots of the game, games. And we're going to hear the main theme from Saints Row 4 this week, simply because it's a complete and utter banger, composed by Malcolm Kirby Jr. And unfortunately, I never really got that far with the series. I played the first two Saints Rows. And I thought they were super good, actually. I was a big, big fan of them. I particularly liked in Saints Row 2 how you could make your own character look like a complete alien if you wanted to. And I love that kind of thing. If anyone's seen my wrestling streams, you know the lengths I go to make complete mutants in games if I can. So Saints Row, I think although it went a little bit mental later down the line in crazy directions with aliens and all sorts of different things like that, for a while there, it did have a fairly authentic portrayal of American street gangs, as far as video games go.
Jetchimo.
Judgment from Yakuza 0, the Yakuza series, obviously kicking off in 2005, and it is at number 2 in my top 5, and it's the only one in my top 5 that I haven't actually played whatsoever. However, I've done enough research on it, and with it being called Yakuza, I think I'm safe in the knowledge that it's a pretty good look at the Japanese side of organized crime, which is a very, very cool thing to be looking at. And this is a game series that if I had more time, I would definitely be dipping more into. But this week we have to thank longtime listener Lewis for that suggestion. Lewis is a huge fan of Yakuza, and I went to him as a kind of Yakuza consultant, concierge, or whatever they call it in the Italian mafia. Going through The Sopranos right now, and I've got a lot of these Italian words floating through my head, and I can't pronounce any of them, except maybe gabagool. So it's nice to go around the world and not just be stuck in the classic, somewhat cliche, sorry Tony Soprano, Italian mafia. And with that comes some excellent English, as Lewis pointed out in that Yakuza track there. So go back and have a listen out for those, because they are truly hilarious. It was giving me chin Pokemon vibes from South Park, of course. But we're actually in the final link of the show, and I can't believe how quickly this has gone, actually. Top fives, though, it was always going to be supposed to be a quicker, poppier kind of thing. But before we end up the show with my number one, of course, we've got to hear one of my earth-shattering reports on Mario as a gangster. We've been talking about international gangsters, the Yakuza, and also British gangsters, of course, from my homeland. And this is exactly what I've got a little taste of right here. We didn't just get that recording of Mario getting himself in a tense situation in the more traditional Italian mafia. We also, and we being me and the Soundtest journalistic team, was able to track down some absolutely insane recordings of Mario fraternizing with British gangsters too. It's so strange to think that he was over here in my own land doing these kinds of dirty dealings, all while I was playing his absolute classics, All Stars, throughout my childhood. It's quite sickening, really. So let's just go ahead and have a listen. I'm sorry that you guys have to hear this. Strong language warning once more.
Nice to see you again.
Look me now, you dirty fucker, won't you? Shits himself when you put him in a ring. Poke him with a stick, you watch his bollocks grow.
Hey, where is everybody?
You're going to have to repeat that.
Have you seen Luigi?
Well, where'd you lose him? He ain't a set of fucking car keys, is he? And it's not as if he's inconfuckin-spicuous now, is it?
We're changing a fighter.
Oh, fuck me, your lady friend got a voice. And who might you be changing him to, sweetheart?
Do you want to play as a Yoshi or as a Koopa?
I don't care if he's Muhammad, Imad, Bruce Lee. You can't change fighters.
Look like you stuck.
No, I lose all bets at the bookies. You can't change fighters at the last minute. So no, I don't have my fight, do I, you fucking prat?
You can take bets at the fight.
Put a lead on her, Turkish, before she gets bitten. And you don't want to get bitten now, do you, sweetheart?
Ooh, very scary.
Make sure your man goes down in the fourth.
You still want to play?
You're on thin fucking ice, my pedigree chums. And I shall be under it when it breaks. Now fuck off.
Okie dokie.
Mario again in a little bit of trouble, but he seems to be able to handle it. He seems like a pretty solid gangster, and I don't know if those keen-eared among you were able to hear. Luigi sounds like he's in a little bit of danger there. There's a really dark edge to that. There's a whole story being told in that little snippet, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. I think as the weeks go on, I'm going to be having some really unbelievable things coming out about Mario each week on my show, because we have been really digging down deep in the well, and it turns out that the Mushroom Kingdom and the princess, this really just is autumn years. He's had decades and decades of debauchery, all sorts of different careers, and we'll check in with some more of that on the next episode of Top 5. But let's end up this one incredibly strong with a choice that I think is fairly obvious, especially if you're a long-time listener and know where my tastes lie, and go to Grand Theft Auto, which is probably the best, the most fun, the coolest, and the most expansive mafia simulator that there is. And it's not that you're playing as a part of the mafia all the time, it's just so richly a part of it. If you look at Grand Theft Auto 3, you spend a large amount of the time working as an enforcer for the mafia and the Yakuza. Vice City, that's very mafia based with Tommy and Vercetti. And of course you have a look at more kind of street gang stuff, and also Mexican cartel stuff in GTA San Andreas. And really, it's going throughout the whole series, various different gangs, various different mafias. It is really what the series is all about. So we're going to go right back to the very first Grand Theft Auto, which again is in that same kind of world, and very much set in very similar kind of plots, and listen to the entirety, and I mean the entirety, of Funk FM, which features three tracks actually, all of which composed by Colin Anderson. And one of the reasons why we're going to play this in its entirety isn't just because it's my number one, so it's kind of earned it. It's Grand Theft Auto, it's kind of earned it. It's Grand Theft Auto 1, which was incredibly innovative with its radio stations, all original music, so it's earned it. But I will actually be welcoming Colin Anderson himself onto the sound test with a brand new interview that I will be conducting next week. Now, I don't know when the next episode will be out. As I say, maybe in another month, but I will have that episode in the pocket, ready to throw in there. And I'll warn you in advance, I might find another top five topic that means I can put Grand Theft Auto in there. I won't be doing that every week, I promise. But it's always nice that if we can play something as a part of the actual topic and then move into an interview that's a part of that actual topic, it will all be very nice indeed, as I believe it was with Ken today in that excellent Godfather interview. So do forgive me if we return to Grand Theft Auto next week, but let's just listen to this. This is incredible stuff. I think I've played some of it in the show in the past, but stay all the way through to the end in order to hear the incredible bass playing on track 3 and also to hear the answers to those sound effects. We'll be right back.
all you babies. Ah, you super fly guy. Don't you dare move from your high five tonight. Good boy. Sit back. Relax. And let the funk be your savior. Good boy. Guide.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to this. It's been fantastic to be back, even though it's not live. I will be there in the YouTube premiere to be providing live commentary along with it. But it's just fantastic to be putting out new sound test content. And I guess that I will give a little bit of information as to what's going on with the other sound test content, which is simply that I've been forced into an unfortunate personal situation. That means that I'm unable to actually do any more work on all of my old interviews or satisfactorily stream live shows. And I'm forced to use an awful laptop that isn't even mine. And I'm surprised it could put this show together, to be honest. So this is just me pushing my gear that I own at the moment to its very limits, and hopefully not too long from now I'll be able to get back to my old interviews. I've got so many old interviews to release, and the old live show with all of my old gear. So I assume you're all waiting with bated breath for answers to these sound effects. Let's hear them one more time. And I'll give you just a little bit of time to reconsider it while I play them one more time. See if you can get an answer in just in the last second. And with sound effects like that, and if you look back through the playlist, I think it becomes clear that that was from the Amiga version of The Godfather. So no points, no prizes or anything like that. It's just for fun. Everything's more casual now. And I hope that you've enjoyed this new iteration of the sound test, Top Fives. And we'll have a brand new one within about a month's time with a new interview and everything. So before I go, don't forget to join us on the Discord. If you are not there already, there'll be a link in the description. And like and subscribe and all of that crap, which I don't like to say, but it can only help me and mean that there's more VGM celebration to come. So thank you once more for joining me, and goodbye.
Now, there's a lot of foolishness about this colossal business. It's so unfortunate. It's really unnecessary. I gave him my know with all my courtesy. I told him his business would not interfere with mine. And he didn't take it right. I know the Tattaglia family is bringing misfortune out on our heads. Well, that's life. Everybody's got their own tale of sorrow.